The Book Nook on WYSO is presented by the Greene County Public Library with additional support from Clark County Public Library, Dayton Metro Library, Washington Centerville Public Library, and Wright Memorial Public Library.
Hello, welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis, and it's my pleasure to welcome to the program today Ingrid Newkirk. She joins us on the telephone in Washington, D.C., I think.
Yes, that's right. Cold Washington, D.C.
Yeah. I see you've got a new book out, Ingrid. It's called The Cat Guardian's Bible, 250 Vital Things Your Cat Wants You to Know, An Essential Guide. And I learned a lot from this book. What made you decide to write it?
Well, a couple of things. One is I think that when people get a dog, they know that there's work to be done. They have to walk the dog and so on. They get a cat, and they often think, oh, well, I've got a cat. Cat looks after herself or himself. And that's not the case, because cats are deeply emotional, needy beings. They're far more subtle than dogs. You know, Bill Maher always says when he comes home, his dogs greet him as if he's the Beatles, whereas the cat may just look and see. But the cat loves you, and the cat needs stimulation. And so I thought I would write it. But the other part is, when we had the BP oil spill in Louisiana years ago, all these people left the state because they'd lost their jobs, and a lot of them left cats behind. Peter bought up about 60 of them. We placed them, except for three, a mother, a father, and a daughter, who we wouldn't separate, and nobody wanted the three together. And they were a mess. I mean, they were traumatized. One had 3.5 legs. One had lost her fur. And so in the years we've had them, we have tried to make them the happiest cats we could possibly make them, so they have no memories of what happened before, and they know that they're safe and they're loved. And so we have modified their living space, our lives, to make that happen. And I wanted to share some of the tips, easy ones and not so easy ones, with people so that they could experience that relationship too.
You just mentioned PETA. I guess we need to let our listeners know about your association with PETA.
Sure. I am the founder of PETA, founded it back in 1980. So it's been almost 42 years now. And a lot has changed in that time. People would shake their heads when we said there's something wrong with wearing fur, or elephants don't want to be in shackles in the circus. Now people growing up just understand that. They know wildlife belongs in the wild, and you don't need a fur and shouldn't have one. So we're still trying to push the envelope and get people to open their eyes to other things, too. We do a lot of undercover investigations, so you can... We can take you to places you wouldn't ordinarily visit or want to, so that can inform your buying decisions, and you can help animals by changing some of your habits.
And PETA, of course, is an acronym for People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
Yes, indeed. Ethical, meaning really respect, understanding, not being a human supremacist, and thinking, oh, humans know everything and animals are nothing. They're not. They're just other living beings with us who have their own problems and interests and personalities.
How did we decide that animals don't have feelings? How did we get to that place?
I think we've gone beyond that now, hopefully. I mean, with the exception of people like trophy hunters who don't seem to think animals have feelings, or if they do, they want to dominate and kill them so they can be more powerful. But most people really take it as a given that animals today, that they have feelings. Back in Descartes' time, you know, the scientist who said animals are nothing more, to paraphrase him, than a clicking machine, the ticking clock, or they're just mechanical, and their cry is just the squeaking of a wheel. He did awful things to animals, as most people know, especially in the sciences. And science went along with this for years, is that you could do anything to an animal. And unfortunately, bad things are still done, painful things are still done to animals in laboratories. But the rest of us, we've had dogs, we've had cats, we've seen Jane Goodall's documentaries, Jacques Cousteau's documentaries, we know that animals are living, emotional, feeling beings who suffer pain and loneliness, and they love and they play. And we've got beyond the Cartesian idea of animals as machines. We just have to be really on our toes that we are behaving the way we should with another individual like ourselves who happens to be in a different package.
My guest is Ingrid Newkirk, and her new book is The Cat Guardian's Bible, 250 Vital Things Your Cat Wants You to Know, An Essential Guide. It just came out. You have so much information in here. I'm a cat person, and I learned so much from this. And I think anyone that has cats, regardless of how well-informed they might think that they are, they're going to get something out of this book. What was the process? How did you put all this together?
Well, I am a cat auntie. I'm always looking after cats, and I've had cats my whole life until the pandemic when my last old cat passed away. And so I've learned a lot just through experience, and I don't think that's how you should necessarily learn something. It would be much easier if someone had told me things so that I didn't have to make mistakes. So that was part of the impetus for writing it. And the cats in the office, as I say, from the BP oil spill. Also, I read stories in the paper and I hear from people with complaints. And they're often impatient with cats. You know, Kim Basinger wrote the foreword to 250 Vital Things. And she took in this stray kitten who a vet had in his office, had been found wrapped up in a plastic bag in bad shape. And he said to her, will you take this cat if this cat pulls through? And Kim's a really kind person. She helped us save dogs from experiments and so on. And she said, yes, I will. And I think the cat must have heard that because the cat pulled through thinking, ooh, I'll go and live in Hollywood with Kim. But Kim says, you know, for the rest of that cat's life, the cat would always just plop down on the top of her keyboard. And you see this on the internet with cats lying on the keyboard. And people get, you know, go away, I'm trying to work. And they push them off the couch, they push them off the bed. And I see this on the internet where it's amusing to people that a cat is trying to make you put down your mobile phone or jumps on you on the bed or sticks their claw up your nostril to wake you up. And people are impatient and they're like, leave me alone, I've got things to do. The cat is saying to you, and this is a point I really wanted to make, is I'm your family. I'm part of your life. You are my whole world. Mm-hmm. I pay attention to everything about you. I know I depend on you. And please, will you play with me? Will you remember I exist? I am not a potted plant. You know, so I wanted to instill in people the patience and the understanding and also give them quick tips as to things they can do to make their home more interesting, their cat's life more interesting, and to be careful not to omit doing something that might cause their cat distress or worse.
I loved it that you're talking about some fairly serious topics here, yet you do it with so much humor. And I was chuckling and laughing throughout this book. I think one of my favorites was in the section, Getting Kitty into the Carrier. And you suggest pick Tittles up, facing away from the carrier, and talking gently to her so that she will never trust you again.
It's an unfortunate truth is that they do not want to go in that carrier, damn it. So.
Yeah. There's so much in here. Let's talk about some of it. Pick a topic. Tell us what you want to talk about.
Well, there are a couple of indelicate things, but they need to be said. Mm-hmm. And one is people are constantly saying, oh, my cat goes outside the litter box. It's so annoying. And I think, hang on a minute. And in the book, I give all sorts of examples and stories about why it's important to pay attention. If they're doing their business outside the box, it can mean several things, and none of them are things to ignore. One is, are you being lazy, and are you taking care of the litter? Cats are fastidious. They don't want to put that pristine paw into a dirty box. you wouldn't want to do the same. And they can smell things that you can't smell. So it's really important to at least twice a day clean the litter box. I mean, just take things out of it. I hate self-cleaning boxes because they frighten some cats and they keep the things you don't want in the litter under the litter box where the cat can still smell them. Once a week, you have to clean the whole thing. I mean, rinse it out properly afterwards so there's no ammonia smell. Use a corn cob litter if you can because it clumps nicely, but it doesn't have the bad characteristics of clay clumping litter, which especially with a kitten can get into their intestines when they clean their paws. And they are clean, clean animals if you allow them to be. But if they go outside the litter box, there may be another reason, mental or physical. The psychological reason could be you started taking yoga lessons or you have got a pass to the movies and you are never there. You are a blur in your cat's life. Your cat couldn't pick you up in a police lineup. So that cat never wants you to leave the house. And here you are, you're seldom there. And they're saying, excuse me, I'm right here. Doing what they can without the ability to speak your language any more than you can speak theirs, to draw attention to themselves. Or maybe there's a new person in the house, you know, and they're pushing them off the couch or whatever they're doing, or they don't like them. And they're saying, I was here first. I love you and you're supposed to love me. Pay attention. The physical part could be that they have something very serious, and that could be cystitis. They might have a little drop of urine in their, a little drop of blood in their urine. You can't see that when they go in the litter pan or litter box. So they are showing you by doing something on the bed or in the bath or outside the box, I'm ill. I need to go to the vet. Better a vet than a regret. Rush them to the vet.
Mm-hmm. One thing that people seem to complain about who don't really understand cats is what they do with their claws and why they do it and why they need their claws.
Yeah, a cat's got a scratch. I mean, that's integral to a cat being. It is for their own health. It's to keep their claws trimmed. They arch their back and scratch. If you love your cat, your couch more than your cat, then don't get a cat, you know? But there are ways to deal with that. One is you really should always trim your cat's nails. And you can do that physically yourself with some nail trimmers. Just be careful you don't touch the quick. If you cut the quick, your cat will never speak to you again. Or take the cat to the vet to have it done. I've got a diagram in the book that shows how you can identify where the quick is and how to do it. And do it often so that the quick recedes. But also provide things that are natural for your cat to scratch on. It could be a Cecil covered cat post. It could be a cardboard, one of those things you buy on the internet, just an easy-peasy cat cardboard scratching post. Or go into the woods. If you find a clump of wood, a stump, bring it home, bang it on the porch or outside a bit, get rid of the insects, leave it out for a while so they go somewhere else, and bring it in, and your cat will scratch on it. And that they have to do that. But if they're still using the couch, it's up to you. It's not their fault. They don't know. So when you see them, pick them up gently, put them on what you do want them to scratch, or maybe use a little bit of peppermint or lime spray and just spray that bit there because they don't like that smell. It's fine for you, but they don't like it. But you are the one who has to make the behavior change. It's not their fault. You brought them into your home, and they don't know how much you value the couch. They think it looks perfectly fine shredded.
My guest is Ingrid Newkirk, and we're talking about the book The Cat Guardian's Bible, 250 Vital Things Your Cat Wants You to Know, an Essential Guide. You're listening to 91.3 WYSO, amplifying voices from every corner of our community. And if you asked me, I'm a guy who loves my cats. If you ask me, would I rather spend time with my cats or with just kind of a group of people, I would take the cats every time.
Yay.
Are you like that, too?
Well, I'm a huge cat auntie, so we have cats in our office. Did I tell you about the cats in our office?
Uh-huh, yeah.
Yeah, so I adore them, and they provide endless amusement to us. But my old cats died, and they taught me a lot, too. And one of them taught me something that I will never forget, and I put a lot of this into the book in one chapter about how my cat Moomin went missing. And in the book, I talk about the umpteen reasons never to let a cat out, you know, from dogs to raccoons and so on. But she did get out. You know, they sneak through the smallest of holes. And she found a crack in the window when I was somewhere at an event. She got outside. Took me 11 days to find her. Mm-hmm. And I kissed the ground when I found her. She was exhausted. She was hungry. She was messed up. But in the book, I talk about how you can, if that horror happens to you, the things you can do to try to get your cat back. Mm-hmm. And it's very, very important not to take it casually. So things like that, I wanted to impart to other people so that they wouldn't have to learn by doing, or learn the way I did through umpteen mistakes.
That same cat taught you a wonderful lesson about putting a new cat with a pre-existing cat, right? Wasn't the same cat, Moomin?
Yes, yeah. Moomin. She came to my house. She was a little Siamese cat, kitten. She came with her sister, and they both had respiratory disease. And despite the best of vet care, one of them passed away, and Moomin was left. And I had a number of cats from the shelter, which is where I say always go, adopt, don't shop. There are homeless cats dying, literally, for you to come and get them.
Mm.
And so I brought Moomin home with her sister, and she survived. I had another Siamese there called Jarvis. And Moomin must have seen the color of Jarvis. I mean, she didn't know what he was, but she must have reminded her of Mom and Dad. So she pursued Jarvis with great determination, and Jarvis just thought this was horrible. He spat at her. He hissed at her. He batted her away, and she persisted. She followed Jarvis wherever he went, and she would scrunch up underneath by the side of him and try to cuddle, and Jarvis would just walk away. If he could have stomped, he would have stomped. But she didn't give up, and within the week or so, I caught him grooming her, and then I caught her. And, you know, then they were just inseparable. And in the book I talk about, they did everything together. In fact, one day they both threw up simultaneously on my shoes. So, and when Jarvis died, poor Moomin, and this was a lesson, I didn't realize I should have shown her the body. I buried Jarvis, and so Jarvis, in her mind, just disappeared.
Oh.
And this can happen with a divorce where cats go in, or animals go in different directions. They don't know what is happening. And she would walk around at night calling and calling for Jarvis, and there was nothing I could do. Oh. It was too late to say, I'm sorry, he's gone now.
One more lesson learned.
Yeah.
Yeah. Never had a cat of my own until I was in my mid-20s, and one day I was visiting a friend of mine who owned a bowling alley, and they had a cat that was supposed to be the bowling alley mouser, but she wasn't doing her job because when they got her, she was pregnant. And he says, come back here, and I did, and here's this cat giving birth to kittens right as I came back in, and they were all black except for the last one that popped out, and he was gray. And I said, I want him. And after he was weaned, I took him to my second floor apartment, and I never let him outside, and he was fixed. And one day I came home and he was gone. And all these years later, I think maybe the landlord, who didn't particularly like the cat, came into my apartment and let him out. But I put an ad in the paper. I was frantic. I put an ad in the paper, and I had my phone number. And the day the paper came out, the following day, I got a phone call from a lady, and I was living in kind of a commercial area with lots of stores and lots of traffic, and she said, there's a cat, a gray cat, under the dumpster behind my building. This is right across the street, catty corner from where I lived, and I went over there, and it was him. And
thank goodness.
I was so happy. He was the most wonderful cat. He was my first cat. And, you know, they teach you that cats and birds shouldn't be together. Well, I had a dove, I had a ringneck turtle dove, and they adored each other.
I'm so glad you got Gray back. I'm so, so glad, because unfortunately, of course, most cats are, and especially if you're traveling, I have all these stories in the book of how to travel with your cat, because people will stop at a rest area. They've got the cat in the car.
Mm.
Cat isn't microchipped. Cat isn't on a harness. Car backfires. Door opens a crack. Windows down. Cat's gone. And it is highly unusual that you'll ever see that cat again. Cats panic, and they flee, and then they're quiet, and it's so hard. So, you know, a stitch in time and all that, ounce of precaution and all that. So I try to put things in the book of tips of how not to make the mistakes that other people have made that you will regret forever, because your heart will be broken if you love that cat.
You have some wonderful advice about rehoming cats and how you find the right person to take a cat that you're trying to find a new home for. And you're pretty strict about it. You're very careful, and I really appreciated this advice.
Well, I'm very, very strict. And again, I learned the hard way, and the cats learned the harder way, that you can't be casual about something like that. You know, the Chinese have a saying that if you save a person's life, you're responsible for it for the rest of that life. And I feel the same way with cats. If you've taken a cat in, or you're trying to look out for that cat, you can't just foist that cat off onto someone and hope for the best. I do tell stories in the book about real-life things that have happened, where in one case, this charming older lady answered ads in the paper for cats wanting a good home. And she told a great story, and she seemed perfectly harmless and lovely.
Mm.
And in fact, I think, in fact, she told a story about her cat having her son having broken his heart, having lost their cat. And so people gave her their cats, and in some cases their dogs. And one day somebody put two and two together, because they went to try and see the cat they had placed. They were that responsible. And the woman wasn't home, but her neighbor was. And her neighbor said, yeah, she's a dealer for the for laboratories. That's where your cats have gone.
Ugh.
And the dogs. And it was true. This person, bless her heart, called all the want ads in the paper at that time and found, I don't know, 13, 15 people from the want ads going back who had given their animals to her. So you can't be trusting.
Mm.
You do have to check. And I say, if you think that someone is a good home, the least you can do is go to their home. Make sure that their lease allows a cat, because if their landlord comes knocking, chances are they're not going to move. They're going to boot the cat out, even if they're nice people.
Mm.
Make sure that everyone in the household wants that cat, because, you know, wife brings a dog home or cat home, somebody else in the household says, get that animal out of here. Okay. Make sure they're not going to be moving after a while and haven't thought this through. So you do have to be very careful. I would also get their driver's license and write down the particulars. If they don't want to give it to you, well, too bad, not going to get it. But you do, and I've got a whole checklist, a guide to placing an animal responsibly, to finding that cat home where you know that, to the best of your knowledge and ability, to find a good home, they will be safe, and they will be cared for, and they will be loved.
You also have the Good Guardian checklist, and I got to tell you, I scored pretty well on this, but I think that anyone that has cats should go through this checklist and see how they score, because I know some people are going to flunk this pretty badly. And like number one, it says, do you check this one off? I never forget to kiss my cat goodbye when I leave home. Well, of course you do that. I kiss all of them goodbye. I would never make a noise when my cat is trying to rest. No, I would never yell or swear at my cat. No, I would not. I never fail to answer if my cat says something to me. No, I always talk back to them. Don't you talk back to the cats, Ingrid, when they say something to you?
Always, and I have learned to do it more expertly than when I began. I mean, there are definite tones and intonation, you know, various things that you know that they're talking to you. And funny enough, I mean, most cats don't talk to each other. They only talk to human beings. which a lot of people don't realize, that they are trying to fit in with your mode of communication by making a noise. And so you must acknowledge that. Yeah, absolutely. And not only do you kiss them goodbye or pet them goodbye or talk to them that you're going so that they don't think there's an emergency and you've just vanished, but when you come back, bring them something. And that can be you pick up a feather off the ground or a leaf or something. And when you come in, you make a big fuss and you give it to them. And they think, good Lord, look what he bought me. You know, but I've got a quiz in the book, 250 Ways. And I say, give yourself a point for everything you know and you do right, including, you know, keeping emergency poison control number on your fridge and in your phone and all that sort of thing. But cats don't like you to leave the house, as I say. Mm-hmm. And so if you never leave the house, you get 2 points.
Well, I didn't get a high enough score for you to want to move in with me, Ingrid, but I love that quiz, and I would love to see all of our cat lovers out there listening take it and see how they score, because it's a pretty tough quiz. It really says a lot about how you're treating your cats, and my guest has been Ingrid Newkirk, and she's not only the author of this new book, but she's also the president of People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. You spent decades with this organization that you founded, trying to save and help and protect animals. And I'm wondering, looking back at all this time doing this, how you want to be remembered. What is your legacy?
Well, I hope it's that other people will do things, because this has been very fulfilling, still is, that I found something I could do that is useful in a way, and something I care about. I've always cared about animals. I can feel their suffering. I can read their faces and their eyes. And it's because I grew up with a dog from the moment I was born, and he and I were close. I was an only child, and he was my brother, basically. And so we did everything together, and I never wanted him to feel pain, and I don't want any animal to feel pain needlessly or suffer needlessly. So I hope that my legacy will be that other people will be fulfilled too by seeing all the simple things they can do that really do help animals instead of inadvertently perhaps hurting them.
And you're still doing exactly the same thing you've been doing all these years. Do you have any new initiatives that you're working on?
Tons of them. Unfortunately, there are a lot of ways in which animals are in trouble in the world. And we have just opened a veterinary clinic for donkeys in Petra, Jordan, where they are seen as beasts of burden and treated miserably. Mm. We have 5 veterinary stations in India, in rural India, where we are taking steers, bullocks, away from people who are using them to haul sugarcane and providing them with mechanized eco-vehicles instead, because they have a terrible life and a very bad end. And, of course, we are doing our utmost to get cats and other animals out of laboratories, because they don't deserve to have things stuck in their heads and be deprived and spend their life in a steel box.
Mm. Ingrid, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you very, very much.
My guest has been Ingrid Newkirk. The book is 250 Vital Things Your Cat Wants You to Know. For the Book Nook, I'm Vic McCunis.